Good afternoon. Welcome once again to Line One, your health connection from KSKA Anchorage. I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard. My guest today is health science and technology journalist Jane Stevens. Our topic of our discussion today is the research and developments on the consequences of early, or let's say adverse childhood experiences, particularly in early childhood. Ms. Stevens is also the founder and editor of a website called ACEs Too High. That's acestoohigh.com, which we're going to learn a little bit more about later. You can reach us with questions and comments during the program at our local number, 550-8433, 550-8433. Our toll-free number is 1-888-353-5752. And our email address is line1@alaskapublic.org. Ms. Stevens, it's a pleasure to have you join us. Thanks for taking the time.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Before we get into ACEs and we get to define what we're talking about here, I can't help but want to ask you a question that's on your bibliography or your bio, that you have been to the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean, it says, in the deep sea submersible Alvin. I have the good fortune of getting to interview a lot of people over 15 to 16, 17 years. We can't keep track around here how long I've been doing this, but I've never met anybody that's done that. So what's that all about?
Oh, it was just like going to another planet. It was absolutely magical. The whole 4 hours down, 2 hours down, a couple of hours at a mile down on the bottom of the ocean, and then a four-hour drift up. It was remarkable. Down, you saw all these plankton that were lit up, and then when we got to the bottom, it was these fish that were sort of long, not quite eel-like, and because the water's so cold, they don't move much, and they just sort of sat there. And then these little volcanoes where all these thousands, hundreds of thousands of shrimp would get at the where the real hot water was coming out and just sort of try to get the little pieces of bacteria that were shooting out of the volcanoes to eat. It was weird. It was wonderful.
I would be worrying about the creaking that must have been happening around that submarine. Was there some creaking and groaning?
Not too much. It's a pretty, Alvin was a pretty hardy little submersible. But, you know, occasionally I would think, well, of course, if there were any kind of little fissure, the pressure of the water would be like a knife slicing through, and I just try not to think about that too often.
Yeah, wow. Well, wonderful experience. Congratulations.
Thanks.
All right. So I've used the term ACEs, and I've also said in the introduction, adverse experiences of childhood. So tell us what the word ACEs means and what we're talking about today.
So ACEs means adverse childhood experiences, and it comes from the CDC's adverse childhood experiences study that was done in the mid-90s, and it's followed about 17,000 people from that time till now.
What drew you as a, I guess as a journalist rather than a mother perhaps, why did you get drawn to this this information?
I think a couple of things. One, I had been doing some stories in the 80s about the violence of epidemiology that the CDC was looking into about, I think it was 83, that they decided that they could look at violence as an epidemic and apply some of the same epidemiological approaches to it. So that was pretty fascinating, but never satisfying in the explanation of what would happen, say, to a family where there were four children who essentially lived in the same neighborhood in the same dysfunctional family, perhaps, and one kid would end up involved with gangs and perhaps shooting somebody and ending up in prison, but the other three children wouldn't. And the explanation then was they escaped, and it didn't seem logical to me. So when the ACE study came along, that seemed to explain it.
Well, I'd like to come back to that idea, if I can recall on doing it, but let's go ahead and move on and describe the original studies that came out on adverse childhood experiences, and let's flesh that out a little bit better for listeners.
Sure. The study itself was of 17,000 people who were part of Kaiser Permanente. It's a health maintenance organization. And what they did was they looked at 10 types of childhood adversity that the researchers had chosen based on a pilot study that they had done. And the types that they looked at were five types of personal abuse, which is physical, sexual, and verbal abuse, and then physical and emotional neglect, and then five types of family dysfunction, which were included divorce, or losing a parent to divorce or separation, a family member who had alcohol or problems or other drug abusive problems, a family member in prison, a family member who is depressed or diagnosed mentally ill, and then witnessing a mother being a victim of domestic abuse. So what they found was, and this really startled them, was a direct link between childhood adversity and the adult onset of chronic disease, mental illness, violence, and being a victim of violence.
My understanding, and I may be wrong about this, but the idea from this, I think, had its origins from obesity research. Is that true?
Indeed, it was. One of the co-founders of the ACE study is Dr. Vincent Folletti, who was running an obesity clinic as part of his prevention practice at Kaiser. And after a few years, he noticed that he was having a 50% dropout rate, and he wanted to know why that was happening. And to his surprise, when he looked into it, he found that all of the people who had dropped out had been losing weight successfully. So he decided to interview them and try to find out why, and was getting nowhere until he accidentally asked a question. And the question was, it was part of a series of questions of how much did you weigh when? You know, how much did you weigh when you were, when you became a teenager? How much did you weigh when you were married? How much did you weigh when you had your first child? You know, that kind of thing. And he made a mistake, and he said, how much did you weigh when you first had sex? And the person who answered, who he was asking this question to, burst into tears, and she said, I weighed 40 pounds, and it was with my father. Thank you for asking. And he was shocked because he didn't know what he had asked. He had meant to ask, how much did you weigh when you were married? And so he thought, well, maybe I'm on to something. Maybe I should ask this question. So the next five people he asked, he got the same kind of response. And he still wasn't sure, well, maybe I'm the one who's, you know, interjecting some sort of bias in this. He had his other physicians ask the same question. And he found that it was so common that he decided to try to pursue why this is happening, and found that people were, it wasn't just sexual abuse, but it was verbal abuse, and that eating was a coping mechanism. To these folks, it wasn't a problem. It was actually a solution, and that really helped him change his whole approach to how he was working with people in this obesity clinic.
That's fascinating. So from there, a study is developed that looks at other kinds of adverse experiences, and from that, then there's apparent high correlation of later issues with drug abuse, alcohol abuse, which are also associated with some medical problems related to those, suggesting, I suspect you're going to say, that early psychological stresses can have lifelong health impacts.
That's what the study found, and that's what subsequent biomedical studies have found, too. One of the other impacts of this study was that they found that childhood trauma was extraordinarily common, so that nearly two-thirds of the 17,000 people had at least one childhood adversity in their background and one type, and that the more types you had, not the more times something happened to you, but the more different types of adverse childhood experiences you had, the higher your risk of developing chronic disease or mental illness or violence or being a victim of violence. And one that I think is really astounding is if you have an ACE score of 4 or higher, your likelihood of committing suicide goes up 1,200%.
So there's 10 questions, and each question is 0 or 1. So if you just answer yes to 4 out of the 10, there's a dramatic increase in risk for suicide, among other things we're going to discuss. Is that's what you're saying?
Exactly. And it was the public health researchers hadn't seen anything that was this stark of an increase in any other studies. It was really surprising to folks.
I have in front of me, I don't think it's reasonable to go through all of the questions, but the abuse, psychological, physical, sexual, is probably pretty obvious to people. But the household dysfunction part, which were there 5, are questions like, did a parent or an adult in your household often or very often swear at you, insult you, put you down, or humiliate you in some way? Or did a parent push, grab, slap, throw something at you, or ever hit you so hard that you had marks left? Did a person at least 5 years of age or older ever bother you in a sexual way? Do you ever feel that someone in your family loved you or thought you were important or special? Do you often feel that you didn't have enough to eat, wear, or had to wear dirty clothes when you were younger? Questions like that are what was coming out, which gets to some of the recent information about physical abuse, spousal abuse, corporal punishment of children that have been in the news related to the sports industry as well. So that's the kind of questions that were being asked in where the information comes from. Is that right?
That's correct. And some other, of course, those aren't the only types of trauma that a child can experience. Those just happen to be the 10 that showed up when they did this pilot study of the first 300 people that Dr. Folletti had looked at. And also at that time when they were doing the preparation for the larger study, it was the individual types of childhood trauma had been studied quite a bit. So there was a lot of research already about the individual types. There are actually other ACE surveys now that are being done, for example, have been done in Philadelphia or in pediatric practices, where they're actually adding some other obvious childhood traumas that are common in the demographics of the people that they're looking at.
I think when you read about the original ACEs study, it's often pointed out that this is not what would have normally been thought of as a high-risk group. They were 17,000 people, as you you mentioned. They were middle to upper class, as I recall. They were primarily educated. They had health insurance, and yet, I'm looking at the numbers of the original research. About one in four had exposure to physical or sexual abuse. 27% had experienced some substance abuse in the family. Those are the numbers that stand out. Of course, parents and divorce and separation was one of the high ones again. So it's not what you would expect to see in what would otherwise be thought of as perhaps not a high-risk group of individuals.
I think that was probably why people began to understand that they couldn't ignore this study, because a lot of other studies about physical abuse or sexual abuse or verbal abuse, about domestic violence, have been done on people of color in inner cities. And this one wasn't. This was, as you say, it was upper middle class, mostly white, college educated. Everybody had jobs, because you have to have a job to be a member of Kaiser, and had great health care. So as Dr. Anda said, it's not them, it's us. And he was being a little facetious when he said that, because of the proponents of studies that have been done on not on white upper middle class people. So this really shows that it's very common, and that it's happening in the middle class, and that if you have one ACE score, you have an 87% chance of having two or more. It's not just a likelihood that only sexual abuse occurs in the family. If sexual abuse is there, or physical abuse, it's likely that there is two or more other types of ACEs. And that's why our healthcare costs are so high, why our criminal justice system is so overloaded, why there's so much depression and mental illness. Even in business, the number one reason for people missing work is depression, and most depression is caused by ACEs.
Let me remind listeners real quickly, Jane, if you don't mind, this is Line 1, your health connection. Listening to this program from KSKA Anchorage. My guest today is Jane Stevens. She is the founder and editor of a website called ACEs Too High. She's also a health science and technology journalist. And we're discussing what is known as adverse childhood experiences. And actually, this is the second program we've done in this year on this. Previously, we've interviewed a local psychiatrist, Dr. Mark Erickson, and we discussed it previously. If you've got questions or comments about what you're hearing today, if you'd like to share some of your own personal experiences, there's a couple of ways you can do that with us. My local number is 550-8433. That's 550-8433. Our toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. And our email address is line1@alaskapublic.org. Are the ACEs findings, and when we say ACEs, we're really talking about this original research, which, as you said, has been reproduced now in a number of different ways to make it seem like it's pretty valid information. Is that information that comes as a surprise to our mental health workers, in your opinion?
I think for people who work with people who have mental illness, that it's not a surprise. I think that for people who work with those who have substance abuse, it might be more of a surprise. But I think that the people who've experienced substance abuse understand that there's a link with mental illness and with what happened in their childhood. So I think that the mental health profession is listening more to its patients, its clients, and understanding that the connection is really profound. I think that in public health that those folks are also listening and beginning to understand that this tack that we've taken all these years of looking at smoking or alcohol or other drugs as a problem isn't a problem in the minds of people who use these drugs and food, for that matter, and thrill sports as a way of coping with these things that have happened to them and how their anxiety and depression and hopelessness is exacerbated in their lives and how it's a relief when you can use something that will take you away for a little while, so that it's very difficult to say this is harming you or it's going to harm you when people get such profound short-term relief by using these substances.
So the part of the idea about the mechanism by which early childhood experiences can affect health is that it may lead to behavioral change, increasing risk for smoking, increased risk for eating, increased risk for drugs that may make you feel better, increased risk, therefore, of accidents, increased risk of performance problems in school and work, increased risk for depression, increased risk over your lifetime of consequences of drinking, eating, and smoking. And as a consequence, life expectancy decreases over time in individuals with higher adverse scores. Is that the way the sequence goes?
In a nutshell, and it's pretty astounding at how much it can decrease life. Your lifetime, people have an ACE score of 6. Generally speaking, have 20 years cut off their average lifespan.
One of the things
of dying, and I think we're now the U.S. has an average age of around mid 70 that people begin dying in their mid 50s.
Yeah. One of the things that gets my attention as a physician when we look at whether a treatment or something has an effect, there's what's often called a dose response curve. And so the more you do something, the more you give a drug, the more likely you see a response, the more likely that response is real and not just circumstantial. And all of the information that I have sitting in front of me, there's a direct increase in all of these factors that we're talking about, depending on your ACE score, just up to 4. I didn't see anything that talks about over 4, 5, and 6. So that dose response kind of perks your attention if you understand what that's trying to tell you, if you don't understand the importance already, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing that is happening, besides the behavioral changes that may lead you to smoke too much or drink too much or eat too much, is that your stress response can be ratcheted up, so that by having, you know, a bunch of cortisol running around in your body all the time, that it can cause a lot of damage in terms of to your arteries, to your, which increases heart disease. People have an ACE score 4 have twice the likelihood of having heart disease, as well as increase in autoimmune diseases, because having that cortisol around for a long time eventually affects your body's ability to respond appropriately to outside threats, if you will, and tends to get the body overreacting and harming itself. So there's a lot that is happening beyond just the behavioral response. There is good news that this, I mean, as you well know as a physician, that, you know, bodies do want to heal, and brains do want to heal. So there is now more research about the resilience factors that can be implemented in people's lives to actually begin to make some changes.
All right. Jane, I want to definitely talk about, the resilience, why some kids who might experience this seem to do better than others, as well as a little bit more about some of the mechanisms, which are kind of fascinating to me. But before we do that, we have to take a short break, and I'm going to take that break now, and then we'll come back and discuss that some more. Let me remind listeners again, you're listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection. Our local number is 550-8433. Our toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. And our email address is line1@alaskapublic.org. We're going to take a very short break, and then we'll continue our discussions on some of the long-term effects of adverse experiences in childhood with journalist Jane Stevens. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard.
You're listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 9 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Line 1, Your Health Connection on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back. This is Line 1, Your Health Connection from KSKA Anchorage, and I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard. Today we're discussing some long-term effects that have been pretty well established of adverse experiences that perhaps happen, more importantly, early in childhood, but we haven't really said that yet. It may be adverse experiences throughout our life that have these consequences. With our guest, Jane Stevens. Jane is a health science and technology journalist and also editor of the website Aces Too High. You can email questions during the next, 30 minutes or so. We'll be here at line1@alaskapublic.org. Our local number is 550-8433. Our toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. And as you just heard, please remember, if you're listening to the program between 9 and 10 on Monday evening, it's a taped rebroadcast, and we will not be able to answer your questions at that time. Before I return to Jane and the information on adverse childhood experiences, I want to point out a program that is available through the end of the year, which is designed to help stem the recent marked increase in pertussis, whooping cough, in around the country, and which has led to some unfortunate and highly preventable deaths of infants. Infants are highly at risk of serious consequences, including death, if they acquire this illness in the first, certainly, 4 to 6 months of life. Immunizations take a couple of immunizations over the first 4 months. It's as early as we can give them infants some protection. It takes a couple to really start getting any protection. So another program that's being instituted locally is through the State Health Department and with cooperation of Walgreens. Walgreens is offering free vaccines to parents and individuals, I think, older than 10 is the criteria, that live in a home with a new infant. To protect that infant, these individuals can get an immunization that cocoons that infant, so to speak, makes it less likely that they can get exposed to this illness. If you can get a voucher, and this is where I have to apologize. The only place I know for sure you can get vouchers may be at Walgreens, but if you go online, and the way I found the voucher was I just put in cocooning, Walgreens, Alaska, and I went to a state site that had a voucher there. So for free you can get a vaccine if you meet those requirements through Walgreens. It's a very useful and very thoughtful community service for the state and for Walgreens, so I appreciate their effort there. Jane, back to you. I've got an email. I was going to start talking a little bit more about mechanisms, but maybe this email will help us get into some of the stuff I'd like to talk about. But it has two questions. The first one says, if two of three people have pretty high scores, what does that mean for actually reversing this? You were getting into a little bit about how to decrease the scores. And before you address that, and before I ask you the second part of the question, why don't you tell us how people can take their own ACEs score right now?
So they can go to aces2high.com, A-C-E-S-2high, T-O-O-H-I-G-H.com, and look for the tab that says Got Your ACE Score, and take it there. There's the original ACE survey, and the ACE, the 10-question ACE survey, and an explanation of what it means. And then there's also a resilience survey so that people can take both.
Okay. That website is also linked to our website at alaskapublic.org if someone wants to find it that way. All right. So the first question this email is, what does it mean? Is there any evidence that you can reverse these higher ACE scores? What do you do when you have a high ACE score?
So you can't actually reverse the score per se, but what you can do is change your neurophysiology, what's happening in your brain, and even what's happening in your body. So one of the things that happens when people have a lot of childhood adversity and adult adversity is that your brain tends to be on high alert for any type of threat that comes towards you, and so your fight, flight, or freeze response is quicker and sometimes over the top compared to how other people might respond. So what's happening is that your stress hormones are always elevated, and that's not a good thing. So there are things that you can do individually to bring those down. And they're pretty basic, but they're exercise at least 30 minutes a day will help your body and your brain begin to be calmer and to reduce that stress level, as well as mindfulness. Some people call it meditation. If you do that every day, that will also make you calmer. And being calmer is actually a physiological response. It's more physiological than it is what we tend to call the personality. That will calm you down. So will getting enough sleep and eating well. Real basic.
Okay. The second part of the question, or the second question included with this email is, doesn't the statement, quote, most depression is caused by ACEs, end quote, fly in the face of conventional wisdom that the genetic component, about the genetic component to most mental illnesses? The author is suggesting that there is significant evidence that there's genetic component to most mental illness.
Well, what's really interesting about what's happening now in our understanding of human development is what some folks are calling unified science. It is the epidemiology of the ACE study. It's the neurobiology of toxic stress, you know, what's happening in your brain and your nervous system and as a result of toxic stress. The biomedical consequences of toxic stress, which I talked about earlier in terms of what's happening to your body in response to being stressed. And then the fourth piece, which is the epigenetic consequences of toxic stress. Now, I think most of us grew up understanding that the genes that we have are who we are and nothing changes. Well, about the same time that the ACE study was being developed, the science of epigenetics was becoming more mature, and now we understand that it's actually our social, emotional, and physical environment that can turn our genes on and off, sometimes tens of thousands of times a day. I mean, it's that kind of interaction that's constantly going on. And it's not that those experiences are actually flipping a switch for our genes turning on and off. It's more of a scientist described it once as a dimmer. You know, it sort of goes on and on and on, and it's a little brighter, and then it goes down as things change. But if you are exposed to high amounts of high levels of ACEs and high levels of stress, there is a risk that genes can be turned all the way off or all the way on, as the case may be, so that they do stay that way, and that those genes can then be passed on to your children. And that's really some of the, I think, the most profound science that is coming out of this understanding of the effects of toxic stress on children and adults and their children.
So that the evidence is accumulating that not only can environmental experiences directly affect the structure and function of our stress mechanisms and our central nervous system, but as well may and can affect the our genes. And not only can they affect the genes, and the way they affect those genes is that when those genes will get turned on and when they get turned off. I was reading an email, so I hope I'm not repeating too much of what you said. But so it turns out that the environment can affect our genes, and that people may have truly a genetic predisposition to mental health. But we also now understand the genetics better because we understand how the environment impacts that genes, those genes, to maybe increase the likelihood in one identical twin, but apparently not in another identical twin, for example. And so that's how we can draw all this together how our understanding has increased, particularly. And this is all fairly last 10 years or so, maybe. Jane, is that your understanding?
I would say the last 10 years, it's now solid. You know, this is established and irrefutable, as far as the epigenetics, the neurobiology, toxic stress, the biomedical consequences, and the epidemiology of ACEs. I mean, 22 states have done their own ACE surveys, and the findings are similar. So I think now that research is trying to fine-tune this as well as expand the understanding of this so that other research is done with this in mind. And then I think that there's going to be a lot more emphasis on the resilience research piece of it. People are pretty certain about how to increase individual resilience. I mean, resilience in individuals. I think there is less known about how to increase resilience in families and in communities and in systems, but there's a lot of work being done in that arena.
Jane, you haven't, at least I don't recall hearing you like I have. I've alluded to the fact that perhaps early childhood is perhaps even more important, more susceptible to the issues we've been discussing. It's a time when the nervous system is developing, and I'm talking about even in utero. There is certainly a movement within the pediatric community to talk about the importance of the first 1,000 days, and that's not 1,000 days after you're born, it's 1,000 days from conception, as being related to and perhaps even more important in timing for all of these processes than later in life. What's your understanding of the importance of timing for exposures to stresses like this and long-term effects?
All the research shows that the impact is greatest when you're a child. Partly because your brain is forming so quickly then and your body is growing so quickly then that a lot of childhood adversity can essentially be integrated into your system. And it's much harder to get rid of it than it is to down the line. And also the cascading effects, I think, are very harmful. So as you mentioned before, that ACEs can affect a child's behavior. So if a child is acting out, throwing things, can't sit still, and in school, then the system is going to respond by suspending the kid. At least most systems are in that response mode right now, and that further traumatizes a child. And even though the child is really just expressing the effects of the trauma that the child is experiencing, so in that sense, it just gets worse. And if the child happens to be in a family where the parents have had no intervention, then the parents are merely passing on what they learned. So as you mentioned a little bit earlier, the problems that we've heard about in the NFL, Adrian Peterson, you know, took a switch and beat his kid. Well, that's exactly how he was punished. And so he's just merely passing on what he understands as something that is acceptable in the community, and yet it does long-term harm.
We, along the same line, we did get another comment by email from a long-time educator who wants to be sure that we all realize that there's very, and I'm quoting here, there's very little evidence that corporal punishment or even other forms of punishment are effective in changing behavior in the long run. And instead, it's one of the indicators that has been identified by the ACEs research, that many people think it's only not only permissible, but appropriate. And further down the comment is, quote again, children respond positively to established boundaries, explicit teaching of behavior expectations, and attention to appropriate behaviors, which I think is very, very well said. And I am glad for those comments. Tell us about ACEs Connection.
So ACEs Connection is the companion social network to ACEs Too High. It's a community of practice social network, so it's less a place for discussion and more of a place for doing. People can come there to find resources as well as get information about how people are implementing ACEs or trauma-informed or resilience-building practices in their organizations, their agencies, their communities. We also have groups, which are comprise people from either cities or counties or states that are trying to become trauma-informed and implement these different positive practices in all systems, as well as professional groups. So there's a group for ACEs in pediatrics, ACEs in education. And it's a fairly young community of practice social network. But I expect that it will, has about, as I mentioned, 3,000 folks, and I expect that it will continue to grow as people find that it's really useful to use the tools that we have on there to work together to make changes in their organizations.
And I jumped ahead inappropriately. I looked down too quickly. ACEs Connection, you said, is an associate website to ACEs Too High, and I really ought to ask you also to describe your own, the website ACEs Too High, which is, I guess, your original website that things have grown from.
Yes, ACEs Too High is a news site that covers research about adverse childhood experiences, as well as people and organizations and agencies and communities that are implementing practices based on that research, with, I have to say, some pretty astounding results. For example, to the educator's point, there was one of the first stories I did was of an alternative high school in Walla Walla, Washington. Its name is Lincoln High School. And it was a fairly small school when the principal understood that he was doing everything wrong, and that was his description. in terms of how he was disciplining kids. He learned about the ACE study. He learned about the neurobiology, toxic stress, and so he changed everything in his school so that instead of responding when a kid got out of control by what's wrong with you and coming down with a suspension hammer or the expulsion hammer, the staff started saying, what happened to you? Are you okay? This isn't like you. Do you want to talk about it? Well, long story short, in over 2 years, their suspensions rates dropped 85%, and expulsion rate dropped 40%. And over 4 years, they haven't expelled anybody, and their suspension rate dropped, I think it was like 95%. And the kids' graduation rates went up, their attendance rate went up, their grades went up. They started looking at the school as a safe place. They could start calling it their family, because the average A score for these kids was 5.5.
So there is beginning to be, I guess, through efforts like your own with ACEs Too High and ACEs Connection, and almost like, I hate to use the word, underground movement to try to begin to assuage or change behaviors across the board, both in education, both in parenting with pediatricians. Certainly mental health services probably don't need to be involved, but our legal system. Is that what you're seeing? Do you think that's fair to say? I assume if it is, it's just in the very early stages, however.
I think that there's something happening in almost every profession or area that you can think of. It's pretty remarkable. Certainly there's probably maybe a couple dozen schools now that are trauma-informed that are seeing these same results that the alternative school in Walla Walla, Washington did.
Mm-hmm.
There are there's law enforcement agencies that are changing how they're doing their job. They're working on early intervention before people end up being arrested. There's juvenile justice changes that are happening both in terms of detention centers and in mental health services for kids and their families, if the families want to be involved, in hospitals, in social service agencies, homeless shelters, you name it, it's happening, and it's really remarkable. Pediatricians are beginning to screen parents of kids and kids for ACE scores. What I think is so profound about that is that parents, especially those with high ACE scores, will say, wow, now my life makes sense, and tell me how I can make sure that my kid doesn't get an ACE score of 7. So as I like to say, you know, being a Californian, that this is the plate tectonics of geology. You know, it changes our whole understanding of why kids especially and adults behave the way they do. And it's because of these things that have happened to them when they're growing up.
Let me try to play skeptic for a second, just because I'm sure there's people who are hesitant to buy into this, and because I was somewhat trained as an epidemiologist before I became a pediatrician. And so how would you go about explaining to skeptics, the people who are hesitant to believe this, these changes in how kids and even adults are exposed to certain situations in their household can have long-term effects on health and also our economy and on our institutions throughout our country, even to that degree. This is profound information. Are we right here?
You know, I share your skepticism. When I first heard about the ACE study, I thought it can't be this simple. And so I did a lot of investigating into it, and they've had something like 70 publications out of the ACE study since the first one in 1998, all in peer-reviewed journals. And there hasn't been, I take it back, there's been one study that I've seen in all that time that had criticism for the ACE study, and it was because they didn't have more types of trauma that they looked at. So I thought, okay, well, that seems pretty straightforward. And then when you look at the neurobiology of toxic stress and all the great amount of research that has come out of that, where you can actually measure things and you can see things in MRIs in the brain, that's pretty straightforward. And then with the biomedical consequences, I think it was in 2011 that there developed consensus among researchers who were looking at the effects of ACEs on things like skin cancer and autoimmune diseases and all different types of chronic disease, that the consensus was that, yes, that these stress hormones that are running around uncontrolled in your body actually do have long-term effects, and we're seeing that in all these diseases that come about. The other thing is that there have now been ACE surveys, as I mentioned, in 22 states. The World Health Organization is also doing a lot of ACE studies in Eastern Europe. They're starting to do this in countries in Africa. Where it gets, I think, really interesting is with there was an ACE survey of juvenile justice offenders in Florida, 64,000 of them. And I mentioned that in the ACE study, the original ACE study, there were about two-thirds of the 17,000 people that had an ACE score of 1. In the survey of these juvenile justice offenders, it was 97% had an ACE score of 1, and a much higher percentage had an ACE score of 4 or higher. So, and also studies that have been done in prisons show that most people in prison have high ACE scores. So it's, I think it's pretty well established now, and I think that what we're seeing is how it's now being implemented in terms of how to use this to knowledge to make changes, and for example, in schools, and then how to prevent it and help parents who have had these things happen to them not pass this on to their children.
You know, certainly within the medical community and the mental health communities, this information is very widely accepted, and I've seen very little evidence to bring concern about the conclusions. I think, as you mentioned, a number of reasons why that might be the case. I'd also mention that it becomes very, very clear as we understand the mechanisms by which it happens. It just everything fits together so very nicely. Does not mean that's true. I always am trying to get people to be critical thinkers, but boy, everything really suddenly comes together very, very tightly with the epigenetics stuff, as we understand how brains are developed and how they're changed and so forth. And it also, I would expand on this idea in that there has been a number of people who have been looking at, perhaps mainly public health people, that looking at socioeconomic effects of health. And it's pretty, there's lots of good information that given the same access to health care, the same access to everything, if your socioeconomic class has a pretty profound effect on lifespan and consequences. And it begins to help us understand that the stress of lower socioeconomic life day to day can have impacts on our health, not just what's going on in the family per se.
Exactly. The National Child Health Survey is now looking at ACE scores in children, you know, like right now, because the ACE surveys are retrospective. You know, they look at what happened to you in childhood. But now we're getting at some of the things that are happening to kids right now. And although ACEs happen at the same rate in middle class and in poor neighborhoods, it's in lower socioeconomic areas where the ACE scores are higher.
All right. We are approaching the end of the program. I like to always ask, what do you want listeners to take away from this program today?
Well, I would say that what I would like folks to take away is that ACEs are common and they can have a very deleterious effect on your life, but they don't have to last a lifetime. There are things that individuals and families and communities and schools can do to change that, and that there's a lot that's already going on that shows that it does work to change kids' lives.
And if they want to get involved, I guess acestoohigh.com or ACEs Connection would be a good place to start.
Absolutely.
All right. Jane, it is. I think this has been a very, very good program. I think we've kind of fleshed out the important issues here very, very well today, and I appreciate all the effort that you're making to try to get this information out to people.
Well, thanks so much for having me. It's been terrific. I really enjoyed it.
All right. Have a good day, and good luck getting down into the bottom of the Pacific someday then.
Yes, indeed.
All right. Have a
Take
good
care.
Day. Yep. Bye-bye. All right, on the next Line 1, well, first let me say thanks to today's guest. In case you didn't know who that was, it was Jane Stevens. She's the editor of the website ACEs Too High. She's also a science and health and technology journalist. And, of course, if you want to continue this conversation about adverse childhood experiences on KSKA, you can join them on Facebook, join KSKA on Facebook, and you can find that link at www.alaskapublic.org, which also is the place you can find the Line 1 archives to listen to this program again or refer someone to it, and the prior broadcast that we had with Dr. Mark Erickson on the same topic, hearing a psychiatrist talk about his experiences and his understanding of adverse childhood experiences. On the next program, Prentice Pemberton is going to return as the host, and he's going to have as his guest an Anchorage couple in which the husband recently experienced a myocardial infarction, that's a heart attack, and how that changed and impacted their lives. And we're doing this so that others can maybe hopefully learn from this experience. So tune into your health and learn more Monday, September 29th at 2 p.m. Remember, each show or each program repeats the same evening at 9 p.m. on FM 91.1 KSKA. Pat Yak is our chief content officer. Monica Goki is our web editor and audio engineer today's program. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard. Have a great day.
Line 1 is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Learn more about Line 1 and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.